One of the most incredible evil forces in the history of humanity has been the communist movement. And yet, because many liberals and progressives in some ways share some common bonds with the communists, they've never quite gotten the stigma that, say, Hitler and the Nazis deservedly have received. We're going to talk about the communists right now with Dr. Paul Kanger, who's written a lot of books related to communism. Dr. Kanger, welcome back to the program. So good to have you on again.
Yeah, thanks, Jerry. Anytime. Always good to be with you.
Yes, sir. And you've written a new book, which we want to plug, called A Pope and a President, and it's all about how Ronald Reagan joined forces with Pope John Paul II, and together they helped, in some ways, defeat the communists in the Cold War, correct?
They did indeed. Yeah, they were really vital partners in this, and I would say, Jerry, that there were of all the probably half dozen people that I would name that were crucial in the collapse of communism, I think none were as crucial as these two.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if they had both died, as they very well could have, they could have easily bled to death when they were shot just 6 weeks apart in March and May 1981. I think that the Berlin Wall definitely would not have fallen in 1989. Communism would certainly wouldn't have ended when and how it did, and I think, you know, history would have been completely different. And, you know, in fact, these two got together a year after they were shot. This was June 7th, 1989 at the Vatican. They met alone for 50 minutes in the Vatican Library, and, you know, they said to one another that they believed that God had spared their lives.
Wow.
For a special purpose, which they believed was to take down and defeat this atheistic, communist, evil empire.
Hmm. Okay, now, let me say one thing about communism. In fact, I'll ask you to elaborate on this. How is it that they have managed to elude or to escape the kind of censure that they're surely due to have? I mean, in all due credit to Harvard University Press, they put out a book in the late 1990s called the Black Book of Communism. And in that book, they document
right.
that more than about 100 million human beings were killed by the communists. And they basically have a catalog of all these different crimes, and it's all credible information. And yet somehow the communists managed to escape. So, you know, as D. James Kennedy and I once wrote in the book, What If Jesus Had Never Been Born, we had this line: Hitler has slain his millions, Stalin his tens of millions. But, you know, the average young person in America today knows Hitler was a bad guy, but they don't necessarily know Stalin was a bad guy. They might not even know who he is.
Well, that's right. And boy, I tell you, I say all the time, I miss Dr. Kennedy. He was such a brilliant guy. And really, when I was coming out of agnosticism, atheism, I used to listen to him all the time.
Super.
Our local affiliate in Pittsburgh, Word FM. And, you know, I used to order his brochures and watched him on TV. I just thought he was so brilliant. He was really important in bringing me to the faith.
That's cool.
But, yeah, you know, I think you identified it, Jerry. You know, Harvard University Press. And, you know, it's not so much Harvard, right? We don't need to pick on Harvard, but it's academia. And really, I'd say even broader than that, it's the academics in the university world who write the textbooks that are used in our public schools. And, you know, I've read these textbooks for years. I actually had to do a study of them. This was in the year 2000 for the state of Wisconsin, actually. And I reviewed about 20 different textbooks that were being used in Wisconsin public schools. They were, and I should know, these are the same 20 that are used in every state, right? There's really no different. Nothing unique about Wisconsin. That just gave me the kind of laboratory to do the analysis in. But they were horrible on communism. You know, not in one of them could I find a single statistic on the number of people that the communists killed. And yet, you know, they always mentioned statistics when it came to the Nazis. You know, they talked about the Crusades. They talked about the Inquisition. They talked about the internment of the Japanese by America in World War II, but nothing on communism. And in fact, you know, this gets to what we're going to talk about today. I even saw this claim that floored me, where a couple of the texts actually talked about how communism was good for women. in particular. Communism was good for women. And I was so speechless when I saw that. And you know, I thought, you know, what's the next line going to say? How are they going to explain themselves? And in one of the texts, it said, legally speaking, women under Bolshevism were freer than women anywhere else in the world. And I said, what? And then the next line, it explained, well, the Bolsheviks had legalized abortion, you know, 3 years earlier. And then I thought, oh, I see, right? So you don't have freedom of speech and press and assembly and religion and everything else, but if you have the freedom to abort your baby and you're a liberal academic, well, yeah, what other right does a girl need, right?
Wow. Well, maybe the women's legs got stronger as they were waiting in line just to get bread for their family.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, I wrote this piece for American Spectator, Communism Viagra for the New York Times, and somebody in one of the readers' comments pointed out how he had worked at the Berlin Wall, on the western side of the Berlin Wall, and he said he spent 20 years watching women carry their shopping bags and trudge around on the other side of the wall. And this article, this New York Times article, which takes this communism is good for women thing to another really insidious level, claimed that women had better sex under communism, right? This guy wrote in the reader's comments, he said, well, you know, when they got home at night, you know, no electricity, no TV, no radio, stoves didn't work. Maybe, you know, maybe gave them a lot of free time to have sex.
Wow. Right?
Yeah, it was just insane. But this is the kind of insanity that's being taught in our schools. And, you know, the cultural Marxists understood this. You know, education, education, education. Lenin said, give me 4 years with the child, right? Give me 4 years with the child, and the seed that is sown I will have uprooted. And that's what's happened in American education.
Wow. Yeah. You know, you and I have discussed in the past about the problem of cultural Marxism, but that's exactly what's happening, with Americans today. And I think we're seeing the results of it in incidents like Charlottesville, even though people might not understand what I'm saying, but I think that's absolutely true. And, you know, people, by the way, the Nazis somehow get lumped in with the right wingers, which I don't understand, because National Socialism, the National Socialist German Workers' Party. I was just talking about that on this radio program with Dinesh D'Souza the other day. How is it that the Nazis are labeled with the right wingers? They don't believe in, you know, limited government, free enterprise. They believe that the government should control certain things. Maybe they believe in capitalism, but by government control. Well, that's not the same thing.
Well, that's right. And you know, I've been thinking in this battle in Charlottesville about the great ex-communist turned conservative, James Burnham, his maxim, Jerry, where he said, for the left, the preferred enemy is always to the right. So, you know, they don't see any enemies. They don't even see any bad people on the left. So when you ask them to condemn the extremists on the left, they're like, oh, you know, what extremists? And so when a Donald Trump condemns the extremists on both sides, you know, Don Lemon and those guys at CNN just chortle and shake their heads in disbelief. It's like, extremists on both sides? You know, they only see extremists on one side, and the one side are the Nazis and the pro-Nazis who they put on the right. But you know, they don't deserve to be put on the right at all. I mean, in the sense that, you know, the right in America are conservatives who believe in small government and limited government.
Right.
You're right. The Nazis, you know, look it up. Nazis stood for Nationalist Socialist German Workers Party.
Yeah.
How many workers parties do you know of that are made up of kind of laissez-faire libertarians?
No, right? Absolutely true. All right, okay, so going back to this this article that you wrote about the New York Times and even the sex under the communists or whatever, what can you say? And this is a family audience, but, you know, what can you tiptoe around that issue if you would? But what do you want to say?
The New York Times ran a piece called "Why Women Had Better Sex Under Socialism," and of course,
I don't believe it. By the way, and I believe that women under the Puritans had better sex lives. I mean, Rodney Stark of Baylor University, a leading researcher on the effects of Christianity, actually maintains that in one of his books, "America's Blessings." But go ahead, sir.
Well, and actually, I got the article. It was first sent to me by one of my students. I was on Amtrak. I was on a train, and I saw it in the title, and I clicked it. And before I even had a chance to read the article, and I sent this to my student. I think a study had just come out about 2 weeks before this, and they come out fairly frequently, which say that married people report the greatest sexual satisfaction.
Oh, that is consistently said over and over.
What's that?
That is consistently said over and over. By the way, in 1992, by 1992, the most thoroughly scientific study on sex in America, done under the auspices of the University of Chicago, married people have the best sex life. They even said conservative Protestant women reported the highest levels of satisfaction. And they said, we don't know why, maybe because they believe in monogamy or holy matrimony, you know, that kind of thing.
Right. And you know, there's something to that. And those studies have been out for a while. And it could be because, I mean, you know, however you want to, let's just move our religious biases and so forth from this. I mean, it could be that, you know, married people, don't feel any guilt, right, about having sex together. Whereas maybe, like, let's say two 17-year-olds who aren't married, who are having intercourse out of wedlock might feel a guilt about it. They might not, also from a biological kind of intimacy point of view, they don't know one another very well. They're not very experienced at this kind of thing. They don't know how the other thinks and feels. Married people are with each other. I mean, there's a lot of different reasons you can go into this and even remove religion out of it, where you can almost kind of think it through and it makes sense, which is why to see this in, you know, of course, the New York Times, right? Why women had better sex under socialism. My immediate thought was, well, I statistically, I don't even know how they're going to make that case. So, and they actually cite a 1990 study that was done on this that claimed that Eastern Bloc women had twice as many. I don't know if I could say this on the show or not.
Probably don't.
Okay,
but we get the idea. Okay, so a 1990 study from the Eastern German women. You know, maybe your theory from earlier. What else is there to do? Maybe that makes sense. I mean, you're in Pennsylvania, right? And in Pennsylvania, they have a lot of Amish, and there are reports about the Amish and so forth, and they enjoy what God has created. And God is the one who's created sex, and he's created with the bounds of marriage and matrimony. And that's his design. And that's what's good for us. And when people enjoy that and they enjoy,
probably,
you know, in a holy way. Yeah, exactly. It's a much more wholesome thing. But, you know, I'm not familiar with that one particular study about East German women in 1990. But I think the theory about, well, what else is there to do is probably the best single explanation, if that's true. If that's accurate.
Yeah, and leave it to the New York Times, too, to go by what this professor is writing, who's citing just one study, you know, one quote-unquote comparative sociological study from 1990, and for the Times to be happy with that. I mean, I've written pieces for the Times before, and I'll tell you, the fact checks that they put me through, I mean, there was no bar I could meet, Jerry. I mean, it was like, if I put something in there like, the world spins on an axis, right? You know, there's nothing I could do to prove it for them, right?
Yeah.
But you could just get these crazy left-wing, inane ideas and claims, and you just wham, there it is. They put it in there. But to me, what's even worse about this, though, is that I've seen now for almost 20 years, dating back to that study in the year 2000, this claim that communism was good for women, and ironically, as this article was probably being finished and posted at the Times site, so as I said, I was on a train when I got the article. I had just spoke to a national high school conference for the Young Americas Foundation at the Reagan Ranch Center in Santa Barbara, and I was talking about communism and socialism and how it had sabotaged family and marriage, how bad it was for women, all the abortions that had taken place. Mm. And I had two students, Jerry, in that audience who asked questions afterward, who told me that their high school teachers were telling them that communism had been good for women's rights and also for civil rights and minority rights. And I turned to Ron Robinson, the head of Young America's Foundation, in the room, and I said, Ron, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
You know, we lay out all these arguments laying out why communism was so horrific, so ghastly, all the number of people killed. You knock down every straw man argument that the left puts out there, and they keep coming back with new ones.
Yeah.
And so now we've got this claim that communism is good for women. And so there again, almost out of frustration, I made the argument why it wasn't. And then I go and I get on the train, and I see now the left has given us a new one. Well, hey, women had the best sex under communism.
Yeah.
And I just kind of tear my hair out and think, you know, how long, oh Lord, how long?
Yeah, really.
How long do I have to keep arguing with these crazy people?
Yeah, well, we're basically out of time. But, you know, what it reminds me of, it's like the people who say, hey, go to Cuba. They've got great health care there. All right, Paul Kenger, KENGOR, visionsandvalues.org for more information. Again, the name of his book that's out there now is A Pope and the President on Reagan and John Paul II and their work to end communism and the Cold War. Thank you so much, Paul. God bless you, sir.
All right, Jerry.
Thank you now. Bye-bye.
God bless.